You are now tuned in to Talks at Midnight, a podcast that dives into haunted histories and chilling murder mysteries. I'm your host, Janet Heredia, and thank you for joining me on today's episode. Welcome, welcome to today's podcast. This is our very first podcast episode, and I am your host, Janet Heredia. Now, I do have a question. Have you ever trusted a stranger just because they seemed ordinary? Or maybe you accepted a ride or shared a moment without a second thought? Tonight, I'm going to tell you why that can be a dangerous gamble. It's the chilling tale of Bernard Giles. And ladies and gentlemen, this is a true story. It's the chilling tale of a man whose everyday appearance hid a terrifying secret that haunted Titusville, Florida. Bernard Eugene Giles was born on April 9th of 1953 in the sunny state of Florida. To those around him, he seemed like an ordinary young man working and living in the growing city of Titusville. But beneath this unremarkable exterior was a man driven by dark and violent impulses. Residents of Giles's neighborhood recall him as quiet and unassuming. He'd blended into the community so well that many were shocked when his crimes came to light. One neighbor remarked, "He was just the guy next door, you know? Always polite, kept to himself. We never imagined he could be capable of such things." In the latter part of 1973, Giles began a series of murders that would horrify the local community. Over just a few short months, he claimed the lives of 5 young women. His methods were chillingly opportunistic. He preyed on hitchhikers, taking advantage of the era's cultural trust and the freedom associated with bumming a ride. In the 70s, hitchhiking was a common and often necessary practice. Many people relied on this kindness of strangers to get from one place to another. They never suspected the danger that would lurk in such a friendly gesture. Now, once inside his vehicle, Bernard's victims were trapped. He would drive them to remote locations where he carried out his violent acts, stripping these young women of their lives and their futures. The brutality of his crimes left a community reeling, struggling to comprehend how such evil could exist in the midst. So who was Bernard Giles, really? How did he become capable of such unspeakable acts? His early life offers very few clues. Giles was not an obvious outsider or a recluse. There were no signs of the monster he would become. But as investigators would later learn, beneath the surface, he harbored deep-seated violent fantasies. In January of 1974, thanks to the efforts of law enforcement and the mounting pressure from the terrified community, Giles was finally apprehended. His arrest brought a measure of relief, but the details that emerged during the investigation and subsequent trial only deepened the horror. Giles confessed to the murders, recounting his crimes with a chilling lack of emotion. Now, from my research and from listening to his interviews, he was supposed to face the death penalty, but they offered to overturn the death penalty for a confession. So that's what he did. That's when he decided that he was going to go ahead and confess to all of the murders, and they reduced the sentence, if that's what you would call it, but they reversed the death penalty for, if I'm not mistaken, I think it's something around, I think it's like 10 life sentences or something around that. Now, in the courtroom, he described each act in detail, showing no remorse for the lives he had destroyed. His detached demeanor and cold recounting of the murders offered a glimpse into the mind of a serial killer. Now, dare I ask, what do you expect from a serial killer? And this is a question that I ask, you know, a general question, right? Just a question that I've honestly always had is, what do you expect? Now, I see these serial killers, these stories where they'll do the documentaries and then you have the family of the victims And the family of the victims are all upset because the guy showed no remorse or the guy didn't say sorry. And my question is, does it matter? Does it matter if they apologize? Is it going to change anything? Now, luckily, I've never experienced a type of loss like this where a member of my family, knock on wood, would be murdered in such a way. But if I was a family member, I think I would just rather not get an apology. Like, don't say sorry. To me, it's borderline offensive. And I think I will get offended if some serial killer apologized for killing a family member of mine. It's just the way that I feel. Like, I don't think that is something that would make a difference, you know? Like, are you going to believe the sorry? Are you going to believe it? And then if you are asking for remorse, or, you know, as we're going to get into the episode and you'll take a quick listen to a part of this interview that he gave to Piers Morgan, he showed no emotion. Now, what do you expect? Yet again, dare I say or dare I ask, if this person had any type of conscience or any remorse for anything or any empathy at that, don't you think the murders would have never happened? How do you expect someone like that to have any sort of feelings towards their victims before, during, or after? I can't seem to comprehend that. I'm going to go ahead and play a clip from the interview with Piers Morgan. And this is the part of the interview where Bernard Giles was responding to Piers Morgan's question, asking him if he feels any remorse or if he feels bad or if he's ever said sorry for all of the things that he's done to the victims' families. And take a listen and hear him out for a second and let me know what you think.
You've never apologized.
To who?
Who do you think you should apologize to?
Let me ask you a question. I assume that to the families of the victims.
It should be incumbent on you as the perpetrator of the crime.
No one.
To work out who you think you maybe should apologize to. I mean, you killed, what? By your own admission, these five young women. Who do you think you owe an apology to?
If I were going to apologize to anybody, it would be the families.
Have you ever done that?
I don't feel I have the right. How do you get a letter in the mail from the person who killed your daughter, right? Hey, I'm sorry.
They may well be watching this, those families. I mean, if you look at that camera, if they are watching, what would you say to them?
I really don't know what to say, truthfully.
Say it to them.
What do you say to somebody that you murdered a member of their family?
Right.
I don't know.
Isn't the very least you could say...
Is I'm sorry?
Isn't that the very least you could do? Is just to actually...
Of course I'm sorry. The fact that we're having this conversation in this way. Yes, I'm sorry.
I know that Piers Morgan is attempting to make this man seem human in asking him about an apology, but my own logical brain tells me that there's no conscience or emotion in someone who commits a crime such as murder and does it over and over again. There's just no remorse there. And in order for someone to be genuinely sorry about something, there has to be regret, there has to be a conscience, and there has to be emotion. When you lack all three, the word I'm sorry is just a word. So at this point, being, or if I were to be a victim's family member, I don't think I'd accept an apology. I'm going to let you listen to this next clip where Bernard Giles describes the sensation that he felt during the murders and how he recounts the victim's last moments were.
And what were you feeling as you did that?
Very stimulated, very provoked, the thing is, you know, what is your passion in your life? You know, what is the thing that you like to do more than anything else? And you're doing it. You are so there that it's like you can see the atoms vibrating. I mean, it's just, it's difficult to describe.
After listening to this, what are your thoughts? How do you feel? He is describing the feeling he got when he was committing these crimes and physically seeing the fear energy coming off of these individuals, these victims, and how it stimulated him and it provoked him and it made him feel good. And it's scary to know that there is people out there, or there are people out there that have these fetishes. This is why it's important for us to see these things and learn from them, listen to them, and that way we can understand these criminal minds, if you will. It wasn't always successful when it comes to Bernard, because in the interview, he mentioned that there was a woman who potentially saved her own life by simply engaging him in conversation, which then followed by smoking a few marijuana joints, to which Bernard then drove around with her for a while and then dropped her off at home safely. As he stated, if he knew them, he would not murder them. According to Bernard, there were at least two other women who saved themselves by simply engaging with him. In November, Bernard Giles then went on to kidnap two other girls and again took them to a remote location and tried to shoot them, but this time his gun jammed and the girls got away. What he didn't know was that in the vehicle that he used to kidnap his victims, there was a book with his full name on it, to which one of the girls remembered and later brought up to the police, who then located Bernard's home. And Bernard recounts arriving home that night to find the police waiting for him. And this is when he was ultimately arrested and sent to court, where he admitted to all five murders. But by admitting to the murders, Bernard escaped the death penalty, but was sentenced to about 10 life sentences in prison in 1977. So although he was not given the death penalty, he will eventually die in prison. In telling this story, I do just want to put out a quick disclaimer, because I don't want people to think that we are telling these stories to sensationalize or celebritize these criminals in any way, but more so to provide some more insight and learn about the train of thoughts and patterns that go into these crimes and the planning of these crimes, so that as women, we can better learn to assert ourselves and be aware of our surroundings. If we recall some time back, this Leslie Van Houten, which was one of the Manson family members, she got out of prison about 2 years ago, if I'm not mistaken. Don't quote me on that. But I believe she got out of prison in 2022, and the woman is a millionaire. Just off of telling the story, doing interviews, movies that have come out, she is a millionaire, and this woman killed people. So it is important for victims and their families to take these individuals to court, own the rights to their names, so that the story is told and the benefits are then awarded to the victims' families and the people who actually deserve it. Well, folks, this concludes tonight's episode of Talks at Midnight. The chilling story of Bernard Giles has taken us deep into the dark recesses of human nature, revealing the horrifying story behind a seemingly ordinary man. The tragic lives of Nancy Gary, Paula Darlene Hemrick, Carolyn Jan Bennett, and Sharon Mary Weimer remind us of the darkness that can exist beneath the surface and the importance of vigilance in our world. That is all for tonight. Thank you for joining me on this very first episode into true crime and haunted history. If you found this episode compelling, please consider subscribing, and if you can, leave a review. Your support helps us more than you know, and it helps us to continue to uncover and share these significant stories and reach larger audiences. Until next time, stay safe and remember, the past is never truly behind us. It echoes in the stories that we tell and the lessons that we learn. Until next time.